Time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitt Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dajon Hughes.
Welcome back into Mid Madness. I'm your host, Dajon Hughes, here on 95.3 The Ticket. And we're about to dive into another hour's worth of what is happening around the state of Michigan in the sports realm. Unfortunately, we are going to start with our Pistons and the end of their season, as there is a lot to talk about there and what happened as things came to a close for them. Then we'll touch on our very much struggling Tigers over in Comerica Park, right across the street. And then we're going to get back into the college game a little bit. As the summer comes around, we know that football is right around the corner. We do have schedules for both Michigan State and Michigan for this upcoming season. We might even take a peek at Western schedule, depending on how quickly we get through Michigan and Michigan State. And then we'll get into our picks like we always do. I'm coming off the end of my lacrosse season. Had our banquet last week, and it was a great time being able to hang out with everybody, family, friends, everyone included, loved ones, and hand out some prizes, have some good food, hang out, play basketball, wiffle ball, and talk with each other and get that last bonding experience in before our seniors go off to college. A very fun and exciting year, really geared up and excited for next year, and so are the boys. So looking forward to that. The Toronto Rock won the indoor professional lacrosse championship this past winter. That just wrapped up last weekend, and they won that in a two-game sweep of the Halifax Thunderbirds. So that was a fun series to watch. And then obviously tons and tons and tons of college lacrosse went down last weekend. We got the Final Four for both sides when it comes down to college lacrosse. And on the men's side, it's going to be a fantastic show. You got Princeton taking on give me just a second. Wow. I forgot that fast. Princeton's taking on Duke, which is going to be a phenomenal game. That's going to be noon later today on ESPN2. And you got Syracuse taking on Notre Dame, 2:30 p.m. ESPN2. Those two games are going to be fantastic. Championship game is going to be Monday. They haven't announced the time or obviously the teams yet, because we got to see who's coming out of the semis. But I'm really pumped up for that. And then the women's is just as exciting. You have the top four seeds making it to their Final Four. 3 p.m., the 2-seed North Carolina Tar Heels taking on the 3-seed Maryland Terrapins, and the 1-seed Northwestern Wildcats taking on the 4-seed Johns Hopkins Blue Jays at 5:30 p.m. Both of those games are going to be on ESPNU, and they will be at Northwestern Stadium right on the coast of Lake Michigan over in Evanston, Illinois, right outside of Chicago. So you're looking for a little fun, go ahead and get out there. But those semifinal games were last night on Friday as you're listening to this. And then the championship game is Sunday at noon. So that's really what I'm looking forward to. And obviously there's some NBA playoff action on, NHL playoff action on. The UFL is back. The WNBA is back. UFC is in the thick of its yearly schedule. So if you're a sports fan, this is a great, great, great and phenomenal time to be a sports fan. But now that we've gotten through the obligatory welcome, I hope that you guys had a fantastic week just like I did, and you're looking forward to what is going to be an awesome Memorial Day weekend. We got to talk about our Detroit Pistons. Unfortunately, the season is over for the Pistons. They do fall in the series to the Cleveland Cavaliers. The last time we spoke, they, as I was speaking, were preparing for Game 6. Against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and they did come out victorious in Game 6. Game 6 was a game where they were on a mission, and you could see it from the very beginning of the game. They won this game 115-94. Cade Cunningham, 21 points, 8 assists, 7 turnovers in 42 minutes, shot 7 of 19 and 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Jalen Duren had 11 rebounds, Pistons shot 52, 44, 68 in their splits and only had 18 turnovers, 43 rebounds, led for 80% of the game, their largest lead being 22. James Harden had 23 points, 4 assists, 8 turnovers in 37 minutes, shot 6 of 13 and 8 of 10 from the free throw line. Jared Allen had 8 rebounds. The Cavaliers themselves shot 39, 34, 73 across the field, 20 turnovers, 40 rebounds, led for 16% of the game, their largest lead being 6. Pistons, like I said, had full control of this game for basically the entire game on the road in Rocket Arena. They came out and they said, look, if you're going to put us out, you're going to have to give us everything that you have. And the Cavs just didn't have enough, as the Pistons, as they said, literally dominated the second half and were able to beat the Cavaliers by a sizable 21 points, setting up for a fun Game 7 in Detroit, right? That's what everybody's thinking. Oh, yeah, it's going back to Little Caesars Arena. Everybody's going to be hype. It's going to be loud in there. The Pistons are going to be hype and ready to play. And let me tell you, that was not quite the case. Cade Cunningham basically disappeared, only had 13 points in this game, had tons of turnovers, and the Cavs just absolutely thrashed the Pistons. I mean, there was no slowdown in their step at all, and they looked like they came out ready to prove that, hey, you guys are good, but you're not quite at the level to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals yet. You're not quite at the level to represent the Eastern Conference in the NBA Finals yet. Let us handle this with a little bit of experience that we have, and you can try again next year. They were led by Donovan Mitchell, 26 points, 8 assists, and 0 turnovers. I will say that again. 0 turnovers. He did not turn the ball over at all. He took care of the ball the entire game and was phenomenal on the scoring department as well. Shot 10 of 22, 4 of 6 from the free throw line. Evan Mobley had 12 rebounds in this game for the Cavs, who shot 51, 32, 64 in their splits. 13 turnovers, 50 rebounds, 97% is what they led for the portion of the game that they led. And their largest lead was 35. Meanwhile, the Pistons, on the other hand, were led by Danish Jenkins, 17 points, 5 assists, 1 turnover, 34 minutes of play, 4 of 12 from the field, 7 of 8 from the free throw line. Jalen Duren with 9 rebounds. But the Pistons, an abysmal shooting night, 35, 31, 76 in the splits across the field, 15 turnovers, only grabbed 41 rebounds, led for 1% of the game, and it was only by 1. So they never really had a grasp on this. The stunning turnaround season for the Pistons ended Sunday night. Reminder of how difficult the final step can be. JB Bickerstaff says the Pistons can learn and will learn from their blowout loss in Game 7 against the Cavaliers as the season comes to a close for the Pistons. I mean, it was a phenomenal season. They ended the regular season 60-22. They were 31-9 at home. They were able to win their first game or first series in 7 against the Magic. They took this series to 7, and honestly, they probably just ran out of gas. I mean, there's only so much Cade Cunningham can do. We've talked about it a ton here on how Cade needs help. We said it for the last 2 years that he's been there, and now for this year as well. He needs help. If he's going to have success and the Pistons are going to have success, he needs another star that can go and fill up the bucket left and right. And at this current moment, he does not have that. And he won't have the success that the Pistons should have. At 60-22, the Pistons should have ran away with the Eastern Conference. They should have comfortably been in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they should have easily been, honestly, kind of proving why they should be in the NBA Finals, and representing the Eastern Conference as the representative to say, hey, we're that good of a team. But with no help in the playoffs, when the ante gets pushed up another notch, Cade Cunningham can only do so much. And up until this game, Cade Cunningham averaged like 30 points and some like 8 assists. Like, there's literally nothing else you could ask him to do. So my hope is that Coach Bickerstaff continues to work with these guys, keeps their confidence at a high level, and they continue to develop. But also in the same token, the GM and the front office staff have to be looking at how do we go out and get someone to help? Who do we have to trade to get a second star in here. I would love a Brandon Ingram, a Michael Porter Jr., someone of that scenario to come in and help Cade out. We need another scorer in Detroit, or there will always be issues with, you know, what's happening for this team and how far they'll be able to get in the playoffs. But, you know, they're not going to beat a dead horse because, you know, I can only lead it to water, but I can't make it drink it. So, therefore, Pistons, phenomenal season. I'm a happy Pistons fan. Would have loved to see you make it just a tad bit farther. But at the same time, you know, you guys are young, and it's only going to continue to get better. Just hopefully they go out and get him some help at that position. But looking at, you know, the playoff bracket and where things are now over in the Western Conference, the Thunder and Spurs are locked up in a series as I'm recording this on Friday night, 1-1. They will play game 3 on Friday, 8:30 p.m. They're giving the Spurs a 53.6% chance to have won that game, a 46.4% chance for the Thunder down at Frostbank Center in San Antonio, Texas. Jalen Williams is a game-time decision for the Thunder, but so is Dylan Harper and De'Aaron Fox for the Spurs. So these are all going to be things to keep their eyes on. But this series has been fun. Game 1 was an overtime thriller. That was an absolute offensive showdown. And then game 2, I mean, was just as exciting. 122-113, just not enough oomph from the Spurs to get things done, especially after Dylan Harper didn't come back into that game, who was phenomenal in game 1. But these were the top two teams in the NBA, so no surprise to see them playing each other in the Western Conference. I'm a strong believer that the NBA champion is coming from this series. The winner of this series, in my belief, is winning the NBA championship. But hey, what do I know? We'll get into what I know about ball later on in the show, and it may or may not be good when we talk about our picks. But the Thunder are really stepping into trying to build a dynasty, and the Spurs, while young, are looking to poise themselves as a legit contender for years to come, especially when you're talking about a guy like Victor Wembanyama. So things looking quite fun and exciting out in the West. But in the East, things are a little bit different. The Knicks are dominating the Cavaliers right now. They came out game 1, 115-104. And in my opinion, it was a mix of, you know, the Knicks having a little bit too much of a break and the Cavs coming off a 7-game series. And then the Knicks came out and won game 2, 109-93. So I was like, okay, maybe it's not a fluke and the Knicks are for real. So this is a series to keep the eye on. We'll talk more about game 3 later on when we get into the picks. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking about our Tigers when we get back with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Well, Jason, I've got to tell you, you're pretty much everything this company is looking for in an entry-level candidate.
Great.
Your resume isn't quite what we're used to, but you've got a fantastic work ethic.
Thank you.
And I'm impressed by how you carry yourself.
So, should we talk about the job?
What? The job? Oh, sorry. Yeah, I have no way of recruiting or even meeting you. This interview didn't happen.
It may sound ridiculous, and that's because it kind of is. There's a huge pool of talent your company is missing out on. Meet the grads of life. Who are they? Talent worth knowing about. Young adults of unique determination and experience. An ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or even mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Man, we really could have used him.
Don't miss out on a resource many innovative companies have already discovered. Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Carter Ostrous here for the Council for Responsible Energy. I want to share a few quick, simple, and inexpensive tips that will not only reduce your home's energy use, but will also save you money on your utility bills. As you switch from heating to cooling, why not opt for a new programmable thermostat that will virtually pay for itself? This is one of the easiest things you can do to really see some significant savings. You can save about $180 a year by properly setting a programmable thermostat. Weather stripping can also significantly lower your bills. You just peel the backing off and seal up any leaks in drafty doors and windows. It only takes a few minutes, but you definitely notice a difference in both the temperature in the house and also your bills. And my last tip, check your home's insulation. proper insulation in your attic, ceilings, floors, crawl spaces, exterior and basement walls can save you 30% on home energy bills. It's a little bit more work for you, but your wallet will definitely thank you.
A message from the Council for Responsible Energy.
Sergeant Jason Nielsen served his country as an MP in Iraq.
I was in Iraq for 10 months before I was hit by that sniper.
He suffered a paralyzing injury, ending his military service. Paralyzed veterans of America's National Service officers, such as Sherita Latham, are trained to help injured veterans get all the benefits they've earned.
She worked with my wife, took care of everything for me, just so I could focus on just recovery and trying to get on with life.
To learn more, visit pva.org.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. It's time for us to hop, skip, jump, and walk right on over to Comerica Park after we leave a Little Caesars Arena to talk about our Detroit Tigers, who, well, have been on quite the slump recently. But before we get into all that, you know where we are going to start in the standings, as we always do. The Tigers sitting at the bottom of the AL Central at 20-31. They're 9.5 games back from the Cleveland Guardians, who are sitting at the top of the division at 30-22. And then you have the White Sox, who are sitting 3.5 games back at 25-24. The Minnesota Twins are 23-27, sitting 6 games back, and 9 games back are the Kansas City Royals, who are 20-30. When you look at the league overall, the American League, the Tigers are second from the bottom, tied with the Houston Astros at 14.5 games back from the leading Tampa Bay Rays, who are 33-15. The Yankees are 30-21, who are 4.5 games back. And then those Guardians sitting in third place in the league. Overall, the Tigers are third from the bottom in the MLB, only above the Rockies, who are 19-32, and the Angels, who are 17-34 at the top. Well, the Tigers are 15 games behind the league-leading Atlanta Braves, who are 35-16. Those Tampa Bay Rays only a half game back. The Dodgers, 31-19, 3.5 games back. The Brewers, 29-18, 4 games back. And then 5 games back, 29-20, are the Padres, sitting in fifth place. The Yankees also 5 games back, tied in that fifth place spot. Just their record one game better, technically at 30-21. But they've played a few more games, so it all works out the same. The Tigers, as I mentioned, seriously struggling right now. You're looking at the batting leaders for this team. Riley Green leading the batting average at .326, on-base percentage of .422, slugging percentage of .475. Dylan Dingler has 9 home runs, leads the team with 29 RBIs as well, and has an average of .241. When you look at the pitching for the squad, Framber Valdez, 4.58, leads the team in ERA, 45 strikeouts. He's got 2 wins on the year as well. Brent Herter, who has 4 wins, has 16 strikeouts and a 3.00 ERA. And Jack Flaherty leads the squad, 48 strikeouts. He has no wins on the year, though, and has an ERA of 5.77, batting 196 runs is 26th in the league. Their batting average of .235 is 21st in the league. Their on-base percentage of .318 is 17th in the league. And their slugging percentage of .372 is 25th. Meanwhile, their earned run average of 3.96 is 14th. The quality starts of 20 is tied for 6th. The whip of 1.28 is 15th in the league. And the batting average, opponent batting average, is .237, is 14th in the league. Before we hop into the schedule and what's happened recently, Buster Only has let us know that the trade deadline has some factors to watch, as it's in 73 days and we're weeks away from the blitz of deals that will occur as contenders try to plug roster holes in advance of the stretch drive and playoffs. But the forces that shape the market are already taking form. And at the top, the number one factor to take in is, where will Tarek Skubal be the big name in this year's trade market? At the outset of this season, the notion that the Detroit Tigers could dangle the left-hander would be a free agent who will be a free agent at the end of the season. At the deadline, seemed very unlikely. They had made the playoffs each of the past two seasons, and with Framber Valdez joining Scooble at the top of their rotation, they look poised to contend for the AL Central crown again. But Detroit has absorbed injury after injury, including Scooble, who now, after being swept at home by Cleveland, the Tigers tied with the Houston Astros for the second worst league record in the American League, as the Angels have the worst. Scott Harris, Detroit's head of baseball operations, is viewed as a realist by his peers. He's fairly objective. One evaluator said, he's never struck me as a window guy. In other words, the table read on Harris is that he's not going to go all in on a long shot effort to make the postseason if he thinks he doesn't have a good enough tee. But Scooble could have enormous value at the deadline, and if he could get more than the value of the qualifying offer compensation, then there's going to be an opportunity there, one AL evaluator said. And it all depends on how Scooble performs when he comes back, so the industry will be watching carefully as he returns from the nano needle scope, not only to see how he rebounds from this new medical technique. He's believed to be the first major league pitcher to have this kind of surgery, but also to see if Scooble is back to his Cy Young caliber dominance. And if he is well, he could be an October game changer for any team. Remember, it's not only about the prospects it would take to land him, but also the salary. Scooble will make roughly $11 million for the last 2 months of the season, which could impact the interest of some teams. Speaking of Scooble, he threw another bullpen session Thursday, his third since rehab program from elbow surgery began. The two-time American League Cy Young Award winner underwent a non-invasive procedure on his left pitching elbow May 6th to remove a loose body. He threw his latest bullpen session prior to Detroit's home game against Cleveland. Manager A.J. Hinch called it a great step, but stopped short of saying when Scooble might return to action. There are little hurdles to clear along the way when you come back from a procedure, Hinch said. As much as we described it as simple, it's still a procedure. Scooble used his full arsenal while throwing a total of 35 pitches, taking a breather in between to stimulate a break between innings. His velocity was as high as it's been since his throwing started, Hinch said. He sat down and came back and did like a simulated second inning. That's encouraging, and it's full stuff. Scooble will travel with the Tigers during its weekend series with Baltimore and throw another bullpen session. The team's medical and coaching staff will determine his next step forward. Scooble is 3-2 with a 2.70 ERA and 7 starts this season. He will be a free agent after the season if they do not deal him away. Now let's take a look at the schedule over the last week and what has happened with our Tigers. The last time we talked, they were preparing for their Toronto Blue Jays series. They won game one, 3-2, and maybe people thought things were going to turn around. And let me tell you, they did not. They lost the next game in extras, 2-1 in 10 innings. Then they lost the next one, 4-1. So they lost the series 2-1 to Toronto. And then they went and invited the Guardians into Comerica Park in Detroit. They lost game one, 8-2. They lost game game two, 4-3. They lost game 3-2 in 10 innings, and game 4-3-1 as they got swept by the Guardians, which in their last, I don't know how many games, they have way too many losses. That's the whole point here that I'm going to be making, is the Tigers are on a serious landslide. Now, as I just mentioned not too long ago, they are dealing with some significant injuries, not just to Tarik Skubo, but many others, Baez, Gleyber Torres, etc. So it's really drawn an issue with this team as far as who is going to be available and how good the team is going to be. So they've really been on a landslide, and it doesn't look like it's really going to turn around. They have to go and play Baltimore on the road, and then they get to come back home and they play the last place in the American League Angels, and I believe the last place in the MLB, like we just talked about a few seconds ago when we went through the standings. So maybe they're able to pull it out against the Angels, but then they got to go on the road against the White Sox, who are playing favorably well this year, a lot better than they played last year. Then they got to go play the leading American League Tampa Bay Rays on the road before inviting Seattle and Minnesota in the town before going back on the road to Cleveland. So this stretch does not get easy. In actuality, there's really maybe only one series here that they can win, or maybe they catch fire and, you know, Scooble comes back and he's playing well. And, you know, you get Gleyber Torres and Casey Mize and Jose Baez, Javier Baez back, and they're all playing well, and this team gets back to, you know, the Tigers team that we're used to. But right now, they are very much a shell of themselves. Looking at this Baltimore series that starts technically last night and tonight as I'm recording this on Friday, they're going to be playing 7:15 on Friday night, 4:05 on Saturday, and 1:35 on Sunday. They're giving the Orioles a 59.1% chance to have won the first game, 40.9 for the Tigers, as all three of these games are at Oriole Park at Camden Yards in Baltimore, Maryland. Jack Flaherty will take on Chris Bassitt in the pitching duel in game one. On the mound for the Tigers in game two, Framber Valdez, who will be pitching against Brandon Young. Tigers 49.3% chance, 50.7 for the Orioles. These are the first three of six games against the Orioles this year for the Tigers. And then in game three, Keiter Montero will take on Trevor Rogers. 60.1% chance for the Orioles, 39.9% chance for the Tigers. The Orioles are 1-4 in their last five. The Tigers are 0-5. And as I mentioned, really sliding, only putting up 196 runs, 215 for the Orioles. Orioles have 386 hits on the year, 54 home runs. So going to be some serious battles going on in these matchups. And then their impending series after that is going to be the Los Angeles Angels, who will be coming to Comerica Park. That'll be 6:40 p.m. on Wednesday, 1:10 p.m. on Thursday, or 6:40 p.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday, and 1:10 p.m. on Thursday. Jack Konowicz, that's a hard name to pronounce, will be going against undecided in game one. But the Tigers have a 66.7% chance to win and a 33.3% chance for the Angels. Then in game two, Jose Soriano versus Casey Mize, who will be returning, 57.4% chance for the Tigers, 42.6 for the Angels. In game three, Grayson Rodriguez versus Jack Flaherty, 61.1% chance for the Tigers, 38.9% chance for the Angels. So it's looking good, but only one way to find out. That's all we have for the Tigers. We'll check back in with them again next week. When we come back from the break, we'll be talking about Michigan and Michigan State football and their schedules for the upcoming season. When we get back with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Church.
Mike Rowe on the skills gap and how a student organization known as Skills USA is trying to fill it.
So the thing about Skills USA that's so cool, and the reason that my foundation has supported it for years, is that it's deliberately and intentionally focused on celebrating a skill. 3 million jobs right now exist in the trades and transportation and commerce. The skills gap is real. Training kids and getting them excited to do the jobs that exist ought to be job one. Skills USA does that in a big way. It's about excellence and competition and being good at what you do, and eventually through all of that, learning who you are. Skills USA is working.
Learn more at microworks.com and skillsusa.org.
Tomatoes ripen. Yellow squash blossoms bloom. Is that the hum of beehives or just the sound of morning traffic in the city? Yes, I said city, and this could be one of hundreds. How? The American Planning Association invites you to find out at planning.org. That's planning.org. Learn how planning uses fresh ideas about local food to transform cities into greener, healthier places of lasting value. Public service of this station and the American Planning Association.
Welcome back into Mid Madness. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and we are about to talk about our Michigan State and Michigan Wolverines football teams, Michigan State Spartans, excuse me. Let me be respectful. As they have released their schedules for the 2026 season, preface, there are no times available or really dates available for for any of these games at the moment, but we do know who they're going to be playing in the order that they're going to be playing them in, and, you know, kind of maybe talking about what could or couldn't happen for them this year and some way too early predictions that, of course, I will probably backtrack on when we dive deeper into their schedules closer to the season. But starting with the Michigan State Spartans, a little bit more of a favorable schedule for them this year than what they had last year. They're going to open up the year with two home games against MAC schools. They're going to play Toledo first, and then they're going to play the Eagles from Eastern Michigan before going on the road to play Notre Dame. Then they will welcome the Cornhuskers from Nebraska into Spartan Stadium. They'll go on the road to play the Badgers next in Wisconsin. Then they'll take on Illinois at home. And then Northwestern, the Wildcats, will also travel to East Lansing in back-to-back weeks. Then they're on the road at UCLA and then at Michigan in back-to-back weeks before going on or before hosting two games in a row against Washington and Oregon at Spartan Stadium and ending the game on the or ending the season, regular season that is, on the road at Rutgers. If you ask me, like I said right before I ran down the teams, this is a much more favorable schedule for them than what they had last year. I like their chances against Toledo. I like their chances against Eastern Michigan. I like their chances against Illinois. I like their chances against Northwestern. I like their chances against UCLA. I like their chances against Washington. I like their chances against Rutgers. Now, with that being said, their chances against Notre Dame, that's a tough one to talk about for sure. Their chances against Nebraska are up in the air, in my opinion. Their chances against Wisconsin, that's a coin flip. Both of those teams, Nebraska and Wisconsin, are teams that on any given day could beat just about anybody in the country. When they put together the right game plan and they go out and execute it to a T, they have all of the talent, they have all of the coaching, they have all of the will and the skill and the IQ, everything you need to be successful. They have it. They just have to go out and execute. So Michigan State could definitely run into a hot Nebraska team. At that time in the year, Nebraska could maybe be 3-0. Let's take a look at Nebraska's schedule real quick, which would be wild. Oh, dude, they're playing Ohio, Bowling Green, North Dakota to open up the season. There's a very good chance Nebraska's coming in 3-0 in their road game against Michigan State. Maybe you're playing a hot Nebraska team who's feeling good about themselves, has put up a good amount of points in those first three games, and they're rolling. That could be a very tough game for Michigan State, who has already played Notre Dame and Nebraska at that point, Notre Dame at that point before taking on Nebraska. Then they're on the road at Wisconsin, which I think this Wisconsin game could also be a little bit of an issue. When you look at Wisconsin's schedule at that moment, they played Notre Dame to open up the year, which is a tough way to open it up. But then you bounce back, you play Western Illinois and Eastern Michigan. Beautiful scheduling here. Start the year with a tough game. Maybe you come out with an upset, and then you go and play Western Illinois and Eastern Michigan. You are thriving. You are feeling great, and you got a road game against Penn State, which is always going to be a tough game. You're hoping it's a whiteout because Penn State seems to lose their whiteouts a lot. But either way, Wisconsin playing Penn State, always a fun game to watch. If they can come out with that, with a victory, and they're 4-0 going into a game against Michigan State, who has already played two tough teams as well, Wisconsin could do more than just give them a run for their money in that game. Obviously, we know what's going to happen with Michigan and you know, how that rivalry is. Anything could happen in that rivalry at any time, at any given moment. So there's no telling, how that game could turn out. And really, one team could be far worse than the other, but we've seen them come out with a victory anyway. So that one I will not touch with a 10-foot pole. Washington, on the other hand, starts the year with the Apple Cup, which is favorable to them. Then they play the Aggies from Utah State, favorable once again. Eastern Washington, favorable. Then they have Minnesota. All four of those games are home games for the Huskies before they have to go on the road to USC, their first test of the year. But it doesn't get easier because then they have a home game against Iowa. Then they can relax a little bit against Purdue on the road. But then Nebraska on the road, Penn State at home. Then they're at Michigan State. So this Michigan State game could be pivotal for them. This could be a game where they could be coming in, eyes locked in, like, oh, dog, We got to win this game to help us get into a bowl game. Look at some of the other games we played. We didn't really help ourselves, but this is a team that we know has struggles, and it's had struggles the last couple of years. New coach there, a lot of things, you know, a lot of hands in the pot, a lot of moving factors. Let's try and dominate that game before we have to go play the defending champs at home and then on the road at Oregon to end the year. Very tough schedule for Washington. And that Michigan State game, in my opinion, is in a great spot for them. But as I mentioned, Michigan State also feeling good about their schedule and coming off of the game against Michigan, win or loss, that could be a great bounce back or a great step stool game for them to try and put a couple in a row. That Oregon game, A. Don't even talk to me about that, big dog. You feel me? Like, I got Oregon winning by a mile. But when you look at Rutgers, on the other hand, they start against UMass, and then they play Boston College on the road. Then they have USC at home, Howard at home, Indiana at home, Maryland on the road, Northwestern on the road, Michigan at home, Wisconsin on the road, Nebraska at home, Penn State on the road, and Michigan State at home. End of the year with Michigan State is a great way for them to end the year, but I don't think it's going to help them out at all. That is a rough schedule, and Michigan State has a very good chance of ending the season out with a victory. But flipping things over to Ann Arbor, Michigan, quite the test for them, but they do open up with four home games. They have Western Michigan open up the year at home, Oklahoma at home after they played them on the road last year. Then they're going to play UTEP and then Iowa. I think Oklahoma and Iowa, obviously two tough tests to open up the year. Then the Minnesota on the road, obviously a rivalry game for the Brown Jug. But I haven't been impressed with Minnesota recently, so I'm not as concerned with that game as I would be with others. I like Michigan's chances against that. Michigan has done very good against Penn State the last couple of years. That's a home game as well. The crowd's going to get up for a game like Penn State every year. There's a good chance Penn State's ranked as well, so that also will help in that game. Then a defending champs, Indiana, coming into town at home game for Michigan. The Big House is going. You thought the Big House was rocking for that Penn State game. Thought it was rocking for that Iowa game. Nah, dog. This Indiana game is going to be insane. If you got a pocketbook and it's hefty, get yourself a ticket, because it ain't going to be cheap. Let me tell you that. And if you can afford to live very frugal for a while, get yourself tickets as well. Then they have Rutgers on the road, which will be a nice reset for them before playing Michigan State at home. Then they're on the road against Oregon, which will be a very fun matchup. Michigan and Oregon haven't played in a little bit, so I'm really excited to see how that will turn out, especially with Oregon being a top program in the Big Ten, before playing UCLA at home and then ending things out on the road against that team from that one dreaded state of Ohio. So this is a very good schedule for Michigan, I think. Western's a win, UTEP a win, Minnesota a win, Penn State a very good chance at a win. I think Iowa's a very good chance at a win, Rutgers a win, UCLA a win, Michigan State, come on now, I'm going to say it's a win. But then you got Oklahoma, Penn State, Oregon, and Ohio State that are questionable. So a possible 8-4, 9-3, 10-2 season for Michigan, maybe even better. So I'm feeling good about how this schedule looks for Michigan. I think Michigan State fans and Michigan State players, coaches, everyone should feel good about how their schedule looks as well. Both Michigan teams looking to have a possible chance of having a good Big Ten season and really making a push to be at the top of the Big Ten when it comes down to who's playing in the Big Ten championship game. Could you imagine a Michigan-Michigan State Big Ten championship game and how that would literally feed families for generations to come? Yeah, me too. But that's all we got for that. We'll be back after the break to talk about our picks here on Mid Madness on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitten Madness on demand on the WBCK app, sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.